You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast for the issue of the 16th to the 22nd of April 2015. I'm Chris Havergal and joining me are Deputy News Editor John Morgan, reporter Jack Grove and Books Editor Karen Shook. This week, with 3 weeks to go until the UK general election, the main political parties have been publishing their manifestos, setting out their visions for the country. We've been looking at what the future could hold for higher education. In any general election, an important issue is always the relationship with the European Union, and we look at that in a bit more detail this week, in particular the fate of the Horizon 2020 Research Fund from Europe. And we'll have our regular roundup of book reviews, casting an eye over some of the latest titles to hit the shelves. First this week, though, the election. Unless you've been under a rock for the last few weeks, you'll know that the country goes to the polls on May the 7th. Most of the major parties have now published their manifestos, and John has been looking for what they have to say about higher education and universities. What did you find, John?
A surprising amount in the Conservative manifesto, not all of which will please universities. So the bit that's likely to dismay vice-chancellors was in the Tory manifesto is the focus on overseas students, where the message is that the Tories would be keeping our ambition to deliver an annual net migration level in the tens of thousands rather than hundreds of thousands, although that becomes an ambition rather than a target as it was before, but there's still no indication that overseas students would be exempted from that. And the Tories are also promising to reform student visas with new measures to tackle abuse and reduce the numbers of students overstaying. And there's also talk of clamping down on the London campuses run by UK universities. So that all sounds like sort of bad news for universities who fear further crackdown on that valuable income stream.
And also talk of a teaching ref potentially in the Conservative manifesto. What's that about?
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the other mentions for higher education is that the Tories say they'd introduce a framework to recognise universities offering the highest teaching quality. And we know that David Willetts in his time as Universities and Science Minister was keen on the idea of a teaching ref. Basically, his view is that all the incentives have been around research and there aren't those incentives for universities to offer excellent teaching. So why don't we have some kind of equivalent of the Research Excellence Framework for teaching? And spoke to him briefly after the manifesto had been published, and he said that you need to create a measure of teaching quality and then see how it goes, and then somewhere down the track you could see if it could be used to allocate funding in some way.
Okay. Well, what about the other parties? Labour have got 6K fees. We know that much. Anything else?
So Labour's 6K fees, unsurprisingly, the main element of what they're promising on higher education. But interestingly now, in the manifesto, clamping down on tax avoidance suddenly appears as one of the means of funding 6K for Labour, whereas previously it was solely based on restricting tax relief on pensions for the highest earners. Now it's tax relief plus clamping down on tax avoidance, and that's because George Osborne tried to shoot Labour's fox, send Labour's fox a bit lame by diverting £600 million of tax relief savings Labour had planned to use to help lower fees to other purposes in the March budget. So Labour's having to find £600 million from tax avoidance, and that's sort of raised even more concerns among vice-chancellors that Labour won't fully replace all that lost income that they lose from higher fees. And then
we've also had Liberal Democrats and UKIP publishing their manifestos as well, haven't we?
So since the magazine went to press, we've had, you're right, the Lib Dems, who are pledging to review higher education and regulate and introduce legislation on higher education regulation in their manifesto, and UKIP pledging to waive fees for students who take science, technology, engineering, maths and medicine courses, and UKIP noticeably, well, perhaps to the left of the Tories on overseas students. They're sending out a more welcoming message that overseas students wouldn't be within the mainstream immigration figures, so that'd be sort of welcomed by universities, and also briefly the Greens, who've said in their manifesto that their pledge to abolish fees would cost £8 billion a year, and they'd cancel student debt, which is another £2.2 billion a year.
I'm always perplexed, but when politicians say let's scrap fees for STEM subjects, particularly medicine, that was mentioned by Plaid Cymru, because doctors, many of doctors earn £100,000 a year, so why shouldn't they pay back their fees when other people, you know, are asked to? It seems a really strange pledge that some people pay back fees, some people don't.
I don't think there's a shortage of people trying to get into medicine either, so it's possibly an odd one to try and incentivise. Yeah.
Okay, well, with a coalition sounding likely, it'll be interesting to hear what potential cocktail of those policies will actually come into reality. Next, the Horizon 2020 Research Fund. On 13th of April, the largest ever overseas delegation of UK university leaders went to Brussels, expressing concern about a 10% cut to that fund. Jack, you were with them. Why are they so concerned about this?
Yes, so I was over in Brussels, and they very concerned because it's this €2.7 billion being diverted from a £80 billion Horizon 2020, and that sounds like quite a small fraction of the overall funding, but they say that this £80 billion has to cover a lot of stuff that was covered by other budgets. And so once you add it all up, these cuts add up to about 10% of Horizon 2020 funding, and that's sort of tens of millions of pounds for UK universities. And this research is particularly focused on pure and basic research, which often, well, it can't sort of get that from the private sector because just the way that these things work, because it's very sort of experimental. And so they've so big universities like University of Cambridge are saying, you know, this is going to be very damaging. It's also going to affect British academics' chances of working with European academics elsewhere, given that academic papers that have a range of international authors sort of working across borders tend to be the best papers. They tend to be better papers on average than those which just working within a single country. They're saying this is a real threat to absolute excellence of UK research.
Sure, and did you get any sense of what the reception was like to their concerns? Do you think they have much chance of success here?
I think this is a battle that's been lost. Everyone recognises that. It's the European Commission under Jean-Claude Juncker has proposed this. It's been backed by all the member states. Quite a few MEPs are against the plans, but they don't really have that much power in the grand scheme of things. And so, but this is sort of like a symbolic sort of marker in the sand saying no more, basically. So although I think people have pretty much resigned themselves to losing this, they're saying just don't try and raid this budget anymore because we know it's very important and we'll fight you as much as we can.
Seems a bit odd that Universities UK can coordinate action on this, but has said surprisingly little about the Conservative Party's plans to hold an EU referendum, which surely could
risk
losing all the EU research budget for British universities.
Well, I think they will, if that referendum is on the cards, they will speak out very vociferously. Selezek Borisevich at Cambridge did say that he didn't want us to be like a sort of mini Switzerland and lose all the cachet that Switzerland have lost. And I think one vice chancellor said to me that he said to a man, to a woman, vice chancellors would oppose any exit from the EU. So I think if that came, you know, if the if the referendum was on the cards, universities will campaign very vigorously in this respect to stay in.
Sure. Okay, well, finally, for books, looks like another packed book section this week. Karen, what have you got for us?
Well, there's never any shortage of books about the Second World War written by largely male historians. We cover Air, Sea, Power, and Allied Victory in World War II, a new book by Phillips Pace and O'Brien. Also, interesting new work on Elizabeth Bishop, book on the ethics of embryonic stem cell research, reviewed by Aisha Ahmad from UCL. Book on the Internet of Things by Samuel Greengard. If you think your printer is talking to you, it may well be. And a slightly different view of military history in the Second World War. Alan Alport writes marvelous books. His latest one, Browned Off and Bloody Minded, is about the men who were not officers, who are looking quite grumpy, to judge from the cover. Also this week, Danny Dorling covers Emma Crewe's book, The House of Commons, An Anthropology of MPs at Work. She gives the impression of going native, Danny suggests. And also, Danny chooses to focus on one account in the book, which is all about Evan Davis losing his seat in the last election, thanks to Nicola Blackwood, took over the seat in 2010 in Oxford West, apparently sending out 1 million pieces of election literature. Dorling suggests we're not quite sure how that could have worked under election rules. It would seem to contravene the amount of spending. But he goes on to say, had Evan Davis kept his seat, had he perhaps been able to persuade the Lib Dems to stick to their election promise, we might be looking at quite a different state of affairs. So it's an interesting book, not only for that, but also for the focus it gives on people who talk about how badly paid they are, which, again, our reviewer calls into question. And this week's Book of the Week is by Jesse Stribe, a young sociologist who's at Duke University in the U.S., It's called The Power of the Past, Understanding Cross-Class Marriages. Now, Stribe is the daughter of an academic, was brought from a very well-to-do suburb to a rural area when her father became dean of a law school in a small town in Ohio, where she got to find out what things like sloppy joes and tractor pulls were. And that got her interested in class divisions. She went on to do a very interesting study of four-year-olds in preschools and how they already demonstrate class differences, but more importantly, how their teachers treat students from different, the pupils from different classes differently. This book is about, as the title suggests, what happens when people from different class backgrounds marry. And their differing attitudes to things like risk, organization, money, education, and what she found through this survey of these are all straight white American couples, was that often the spouses from working class backgrounds had much more in common with other people from their own class than they did with their own spouses. But she says the positive message of this is that despite all those differences, people's attitudes don't change markedly. They don't kind of go native within the marriage, but they are interested in making it work. So she says that's a hopeful sign.
Excellent. Sounds like plenty of reading material there. Also in this week's magazine, our cover feature is on sabbaticals, their changing nature and their value for academics. We speak to five researchers who took the plunge into new directions of research and new cultures as well. And our lead story this week is on intellectual property rights. A survey by THE has found almost 20% of universities taking the rights to intellectual property developed by their students in policies which have been described as outdated and legally questionable. For more coverage throughout the week, head to our website, timeshighereducation.co.uk, and comment on any of these stories. You can find us on all the social networks, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+, and Facebook. Just search for Times Higher Education. That's all for this week's podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.